We'll move on to the next verse. So now, after Arjuna having spoken, he becomes quiet. And the Lord is still quiet. He has hardly spoken, only one or two, you know, sentences. He's still sitting very quietly. So now Sanjay, now it takes us, see, this Vyasa is such a beautiful dramatist. Anytime there is a pause, he shifts our attention. Now he takes us back to the palace where the old king Dhritarashtra is sitting with his advisor Sanjay. And Sanjay, through his divine vision, even though he's sitting in the palace, he has this vision where he, given to him by the sage Vedvyas, where he can see what is happening in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Not only he can see, but he can read the minds of the people. That's how this wonderful vision was. Unlike TV, TV can show you, say, what is happening in different parts of the world, but cannot give us the feelings of the people unless they speak. So here, Sanjay now speaks. He's telling Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya uvacha.
Eva muktva rishikesham. Gurakesha parantapah.
Nayotsya iti govindam.
Uktva tushnim babhuvah.
So Sanjay, what Sanjay said, what he said, evam uktva, having said this, evam uktva, to whom? To Rishikesha. Rishikesha means the lord of the senses. One of Krishna's name was Rishikesh because he is the lord of the senses, because our senses are working because of the lord's presence. So the lord of the senses, Rishikesham, who said it? Gudakesha. Gudakesha means this great warrior who had conquered sleep. Because it is said Arjuna was such an evolved warrior that he could go days on end without sleeping. Or if he wanted to sleep, in half an hour he could just go to sleep like that. Second thing was that he had actually practiced shooting in the dark. He had spent hours and hours waking up at night and shooting at like a tree and something, just in the dark, with the remembering of where it is or from the sound. So she says such a great warrior is standing here, and he's Parantapa, and he's the scorcherer of foes, means he's able to destroy his enemies. And such a warrior is sitting there on the chariot, looking depressed, and what is he saying? Na yotse, I shall not fight. Iti Govindam, whom is he telling? Govinda. Govinda means the lord of the world. Uktva, having said, Tushnim Babhuvaha, he became silent. He became completely still, completely silent, in a state of dejection and shock. Having said to the teacher that I shall not fight. Now the I is there. So there are a few points in this. One is that this message is being given to Dhritarashtra, the king. And why is Sanjay bringing up all these points, that he is a great warrior, he can shoot in the dark, he has spent so many hours, he has destroyed so many enemies. And whom is he talking to? The lord of the universe, the lord of the senses. So what he's trying to tell Dhritarashtra, that you are not facing an ordinary enemy. Don't think this is only Arjuna and Krishna. Even though the Pandava army is smaller, but they have the lord of the universe with them, and this great warrior Arjuna. So he's telling that so that he's hoping even now that maybe Dhritarashtra will get some sense in his head and he will say stop the war. Because being the king and being the senior, he was the only one who could at this moment stop the war and withdraw the armies. So Sanjay is hopeful that at least this will happen, that this. And so hoping against hope, he knows it's too late, he knows the war is already ready to start, but he thought maybe Dhritarashtra will get some sense, some wisdom, even at the last minute. But as we know, Dhritarashtra was not only mentally, physically blind, but even mentally blind, with attachment for his son, for his children, and for his, all that. So he actually was not capable of thinking what is right, what is wrong. So it was like you are speaking to a person who is not only whose eyes are closed, but whose mind is closed. See, if you talk to somebody who is willing to listen, then it is worth. But this was wasted on this person. So that is the one point in this, that you are facing the Lord of the universe. The second point that we get in this verse is Na Yotse. I shall not fight. See, the I again has come. Arjuna always was thinking that I am fighting this war, and Krishna tells him, you are just an instrument. I am the one who has already decided the outcome. These evil people will go. That's what he says in the 11th chapter. Maye nihataf purvam eva nimit matram bhava savya sachin. O left-handed warrior, you are my instrument. You will carry out my work. If you don't, I'll find somebody else to do it. But these evil Kauravas have to go. The time has come. So he thinks that I am fighting. And the ego is a very, very big obstacle when we are not only in the spiritual path, but even anything else you want to succeed in, the ego becomes a big problem. And how does the ego show up? In the physical attachments. You know, I know something is not good for me, I still do it. I know that I shouldn't eat this, I still eat it. I know this is not right, I still do it. So at the physical level, it comes up in the attachment to actions. At the mental level, attachment to emotions, to people, wrong attachment, where I get so dependent on this individual or this person that without them my life is useless, and I am not worth anything, and I am in love. Love is good, but when love becomes attachment, when it becomes dependence, when I'm unable to function, then that is ego. So ego manifests in the physically as attachment to objects, mentally as attachment to emotionals, and then intellectually as attachment to ideas or concepts, where my idea alone is right. I am that communism alone is the best, or capitalism, or only what I say will work in this family or in this house. When this I comes in, it can be at various levels. And the ego is a very, very difficult opponent. And spiritually, even the ego can come very subtle. And that comes when, especially those who are on this path, they have to be very watchful. You know, I am more spiritual. I go to the church more times than he does. Or I pray more often, or I read more, or I know more, or I can give talks, or I have written books. So this subtle ego, where I am holier than thou, you know, in Christianity they call that holier than thou, that I am holier than thou. So this ego arises at the unexpected level. You don't know from where it is arising. You think you're doing wonderful and you're doing a great job. And then suddenly this subtle ego comes. You know what? I think I'm somebody special. Without me, you know, this would not have happened. So one has to be very watchful at all levels, again and again. Be very clear that make sure the ego is not arising and not taking over my thinking. So ego is so powerful that they give the example. I was reading in another commentary about David and Goliath. This is a very good story. I'm sure a lot of you have heard it, but it's worth repeating. So there were these two group armies that were fighting, the Israelis, who were at that time religious. They believed in God and they were, you know, more spiritual. And then there were these pagans who didn't believe in any God and who were very violent, and they wanted to destroy Israel. So there was this war going on. And one time they said, you know, this has been going on so long, so many armies are dying and all. Let's do one thing. So they said, we'll send our best soldier and you send your best soldier, and whoever out of them wins, if the Israeli soldier wins, then they said, we will leave. We won't fight with you anymore. In fact, we'll serve you. But if the pagan soldier wins, then the Israelis have to give their kingdom and everything to these people. So they said, well, it's, you know, it's better than fighting. So they sent Goliath, and Goliath from the pagan army was huge. He was a huge man, very tall, very strong, a lot of strong armor with a sword, and nobody could defeat him in sword fighting. And his armor was very powerful, and he was huge, and he had killed so many great warriors and soldiers. And said, this guy is coming, and whom are we going to send? You know, nobody is willing to go. Nobody asked for volunteers. So I don't want to die because this guy has killed the best. So this little young boy, young man comes. His name is David. He's actually carrying water for his brother. His brother is one of the soldiers in the army, and he's bringing water. And the soldiers are talking, and the general is talking. Who will go and all? So he said, what's going on? David says, you know, we need to go fight this Goliath. It's okay, it's not for you. You go and bring water. You are not qualified. You know, we are not talking to you. He said, no, let me hear. So he says, okay, I'll go and fight. He said, what? You're just a kid and you are not even a good warrior and you have not even been properly trained. He said, no, I'll go fight. Don't worry about it. They said, okay, nobody else is willing. So they sent him. So this young boy is coming, this, you know, young man, maybe a youth, and he's carrying not any weapons or sword or anything. He's carrying a slingshot with 5 stones. You know, this gulel, the slingshot that we use in India to kill, you know, to hit other kids. We used to do that. So he's carrying that, and this guy is having armor and weapon. He says, what are you here for? Are you here to catch a dog? What are you bringing this slingshot? Are you a fool? He says, you're coming to fight with me. He says, yeah, I'm ready. So this guy picks up his sword and his armor. And David, he was good with slingshot because he used to, every day, all day, he used to go and shoot at birds and try to hit trees and all. So he has 5 pebbles. So he takes one and hits it with perfect aim, hits it so hard that it hits him right in the middle of the forehead, you know, just below his helmet. And such a powerful shot, he's like shaken up. He doesn't know what to do. And he becomes dizzy and falls. And the moment he does, David takes out his sword and cuts off his head. So, of course, this story is violent. I'm not telling it for that purpose. See, the ego is much bigger, has all this equipment, has all these weapons. And we are comparatively much weaker. And we let the ego take over us. But we have 5 pebbles. And you know what 5 pebbles are? The Panchakshari mantra, Om Namah Shivaya. Chanting the name of the Lord, or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, or the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. So these 5 words or 5 letters, whichever God you use, chanting the name of the Lord is a very powerful mantra to destroy the ego. Because the ego will raise its head as long as I or me. But when the Lord is invoked and says, Lord, you are working through me. I am nobody. You are the one can only help me overcome. So that is the beautiful message of this particular verse. That the 5 pebbles are our 5 words of the mantra, the holy mantra, which helps us to overcome not only ego, but all obstacles. Anything you can overcome in the world, if the Lord is with you. That's what Arjuna told Krishna. He says, if you are with me, even I don't have your whole army, I am fine with it. So he says the ego is with us, and that the 5 represents the mantra, the holy mantra. And then the last point is, Uktva Tushnim Babhuva. So he became silent. He became dejected. It's like he was in shock. I don't know what to do physically, mentally, intellectually. The shock, like, and unfortunately what we are seeing, like in what's happening in Harvey or what's happening in Irma, when somebody comes back to their home and find the home is leveled and nothing around the whole island, like St. Martin, or how the whole island is leveled. Even the trees have been taken. There's no trees left. There's no buildings left. It's just flat ground. And somebody comes and the shock he feels, wow. What has happened? It's so unfortunate. So similarly, he at that moment had that same kind of emotional shock, where at this moment, I don't know what to do. I have lost everything. Of course, he had not lost his wealth or his land or his property or his body, but mentally he was completely stilled in a silence of dejection, a silence of shock, where at that moment, I don't know what to do. I have nothing to talk. And Lord, you help me. So that is what Sanjay says. Anything?
Totally wiped out. He just, it's his ego. It's gone. He doesn't know what to do. There's nothing.
Yes.
That's why he can't face it.
Right. Because even though he knows what is right, but the right thing is that he's working for a higher cause. But instead of that, I am doing it and I will be responsible. So that ego has arisen, and then he sees that I have to do this. Instead of saying that I am working for the Lord is working through me, or I am working for society, or the society needs me at this moment. Instead of that, he's saying I. And then the moment I comes, then all the physical, mental, and intellectual confusions arise in him. So it is because he knows his duty, but he is incapable of doing it. So it's like, I know what is right and what is wrong, but I'm not capable of. A lot of times we are faced with those situations. I know what is right, but I cannot do it. And so that is when the ego arises, or the doership. Ego is I and my. The moment it is I and mine, that is ego. I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. Right.
He gives a good reason, which is very logical for all of us, because we are in that state still.
Absolutely.
But it is still there.
Right.
He's still there. That's what he doesn't want to fight.
Yes.
Until he learns.
Yeah, his ego ends actually in the 18th chapter. We have to wait till the 18th chapter to find out what happens. That'll take a few years. But no, this book is so beautiful. This text is so, every verse is so, you know, wonderful. It's such a blessing for me to be able to share it, because every verse is filled with so much meaning and so many ideas. So anything else? Is that clear for you?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I think surrender to the Lord, surrender to the teacher is very, very important. And humility. Without humility, that's why even Jesus says, "Not the meek shall inherit the earth." It is only the humble people who truly progress. If you are egotistical, if you are arrogant, if you think I am wonderful, then progress is not possible. So in any situation, when I go to a teacher, I must go with a clean slate. Teacher, I am empty. You write on it. If my slate is already filled with a lot of writing, I think I already know so much. And then the poor teacher has no place to write, because you have filled up your slate, your mind with all kind of junk. So empty your mind does not mean you go like an ignorant person, but the surrender is very important, and the willingness to learn.
I think that so is this the point at which he accepts Krishna as teacher?
Yes, that's why he says, Shishyasteham shadi mam tvam prapanna. I am surrendered to you, I prostrate to you, I accept you as my guru, I am your shishya, I am your devotee. Shadhi mam, teach me. Please teach me. Yes, so that's why. And why? Because I myself cannot get out of this confusion. I don't, because this shoka is taking over my body, my mind, my intellect.
So you can't give up for wrong people, your land. He's going to teach that. And
right.
That's a confusion where he is at right now.
Absolutely. Right, right. Because he's telling him, is the fight is not between cousins, it's between good and evil. So you're not fighting for piece of land, you're fighting for the goodness of the whole society. What is good for society? Because if the evil people continue to rule, which they have been for so many years, 13 years, that the society is going to become a mess. So,
like,
yes.
Yes.
No, yeah, that he had blinded himself. Not only he was physically blind, but he was mentally blind too. Even though he knew what is happening is wrong, my children are doing wrong, he could have stopped them, he didn't stop. So he was not only physically blind, and he was mentally blind, and was not listening to advice even from his minister, Sanjay, who was very wise. So, yeah, that's the significance. So that's how we become, when we are not ready to listen to reason to somebody,